joining. As usual, we have the last session of the GPF for the year 2011. So I think we have quite a bit of activity on the schedule today. I think Lily and Richard and others had a good talk. I think there are a couple of sessions where, unlike previous sessions, we do intend to make them as an education session. For example, the revenue recognition session is going to be just to inform you where we are, what we are doing, what is the schedule on it. Similarly, on the research, it's going to be a similar format to give you an update on the comments of where we are. But other than that, I think it's going to be hopefully an interesting session like always it is. And with that, I want to give you one administrative thing. At 11 o'clock, I believe there is a 2 minute silence we need to observe for the Armistice Day. So I think there's going to be an alarm for that. There should be an alarm for that, so be aware of that. Other than that, over to Alan, Sue, and Peter for IAC work plan update.
Thanks, I want to talk about the projects that you're going to use for the sections on later. So just to mention the fact that we completed the deliberations on the revenue project, and we'll talk about that in more detail later today. And we're about to commence shortly the re-deliberations on both the leases project and the insurance contract project. So the comment letter period and outreach for the commission ends on those projects ready for re-deliberations. Leases will start the comment letter analysis this year and insurance for re-deliberations to begin early next year. Moving on to financial instruments. In the next couple of weeks, we'll publish a new version of IFRS 9. Unfortunately for the corporate community, that will include our new chapter on hedge accounting, which will more closely align hedge accounting with actual risk management activities. And that will be published in the next couple of weeks. Obviously, access to that in Europe depends on the source. But as far as the IFC is concerned, once it's published, it's available to anybody who wants to early apply that. Although you need to also apply the classification and measurement requirements at the same time. But for some corporates, I think they'll still choose to do that. Even though the sort of main headline on that document will be hedge accounting, there's two other important changes in that document as well. One is removing the mandatory effective date for IFRS 9. A little bit unusual, but we're going to have an IFRS that doesn't have a mandatory date. It will still be available for those who want to apply it, but the board decided that given that we're still finalising the exact classification of measurement model and we're still discussing impairment, it was best to remove the 2015 date until we've got more clarity on the final impairment model and when the final IFRS 9 will actually be published. And at that point in time, we'll redetermine the appropriate effective date that gives everybody enough time to implement particularly the new impairment proposal.
But do you have to any early implement then that by itself without other elements of IFRS 9?
You can early apply hedge accounting, but you have to apply the current classification measurement model that's in IFRS 9 at the same time. What you can apply in isolation, which is the other change that's been brought in this new document, is the own credit changes. So if you have any of your own debt that's measured at fair value, you can elect just to present the fair value changes in OCI on your own debt without introducing any of the other changes that are in IFRS 9. That's changed from what's in IFRS 9 today to allow people to apply that improvement in financial reporting before any of the other parts of IFRS 9 if people wish to do so. So all of that will be in the document that we're going to publish hopefully later in November. Now, subject to that, we're still working on finalising the classification and measurement model and the expected credit loss impairment model. We're very close to finishing deliberations on both of those. It should be finished in December, January timeline. And so we hope that the final IFRS 9 with all of the parts of it complete will be published in the first half of 2014. Separate to the RCS 9 project, we're also working on a discussion paper on accounting for macro hedging activities. Now, often when people talk about macro hedging, the focus is on banks and interest rate risk management, but we're actually very keen to use this discussion paper also to talk to corporates about the macro hedging activities they might have in place for commodities, etc., and to include that in the deliberations and the development for the macro model. And that discussion paper we hope to be published in the first quarter of next year with a 180-day comment period to allow us enough time to read others. I think that was all from me on the current agenda. If you have any questions to answer them, but you'll talk about revenue and lease in more detail later today.
Okay.
You know, based upon the current development, I think IFRS 9 and 4 are not synchronous. But I think 9 coming earlier and 4 is coming after. And I assume that under the current draft, for the designation of the current asset in IFRS 4 upon adoption. So I mean, I assume that at that stage, and the insurance contract is probably coming at the later part of 2018 or 9, which is closer to Solvency II in the European insurance entity. So we really hope that 4 can be closer and synchronized with Solvency II. At the same time, 9 and 4, even though the time is different, those are regeneration of the final target stays at its planned.
That's my important, and a lot of people have raised the importance of the interaction between those two projects. We'll look at a few things. One is the ability to redesignate items as a result of the new insurance contract requirements. We'll also have a specific discussion in the context of IFRS 9 about whether there's anything special we need to do for insurance companies or for assets backing insurance contracts, more specifically as part of the IFRS 9 deliberation. But also the effective date is very important, and I know that at a minimum many would like to ensure that IFRS 4 was at least available to be applied before the mandatory date of IFRS 9, and that's something that we'll discuss with the board.
Bob, I'm not sure if you were going to go on the implementation separately we've done implementation separately, or you've done with the...
Michael's coming in at 2:15, I think, for an hour.
I can answer my question. Fair value measurement unit of accounts, can you provide more detail on what you're looking at there, what's in that project?
Okay, the fair value measurement unit of account, there's two separate things that we're looking at. One is if you have an investment in a subsidiary, an associate, or a joint venture, where you are fair valuing the shares that you hold in those entities, what's the appropriate unit of account for that fair value measurement? And the board has tentatively decided so far that even though you're measuring the subsidiary or the associate, the way that you need to do the fair value measurement is by using P times Q. We know that people have different view on that, but there will be an exposure draft on that hopefully in the first quarter of next year, so people will have an opportunity to comment. The other unit of account issue that we're looking at on fair value measurement, which I think will come to board in December, is the scope of the portfolio exemption in IFRS 15, where you can use that and whether it's relevant for level one instruments. So two clarifications for how you work out the fair value on some type of investment in IFRS 15. But as I said, both of those, if there's changes, they'll be exposed to comments.
Any other questions for Sue or?
A whole raft of narrative given anything particularly challenging there?
I think Michael's going to
tell you. Oh, Michael's
going to tell you. He's got kind of his thing for a second now, but that's why I think that's probably it. We are concerned about the numbers that are coming through, and particularly relate to one particular one standard at a time, so we are trying to batch things up to put them through. They're also sort of taking it a little bit up, something that I'll talk about in a minute. And you'll see that people are getting a lot of requests now just the equity method. So that's something we're looking at potentially trying to accelerate our research projects on the equity method because there's so many issues coming up with what operations for pensions, equity methods and so on that we need to try to accelerate that project. Did anyone speak out to the...
Yeah, please. Yeah,
okay.
So yeah, you want to lunch on it anyway.
Yeah. So what is the major project? But a couple of other things that are going on too. Rate regulations, for example, are too late for that. The board two weeks ago, they agreed to finalise an implementation of IFRS on rate regulation. What they will allow people to do is, first time adopted, to be allowed to essentially continue to account for rate regulation activity within some constraints and adopt IFRS. In terms of comparability, I've been very careful with this proposal because essentially the first time adopted will be able to pick up all the starting points for the product climate equipment and so on. In the same way that any other first time adopted will. And from then on, they basically just have to strip out any rate regulation effects. So you should get the same PP&E, same expenses, revenue that you would have got if they hadn't used rate regulation accounting. And then you'll see separate lines for the income statement and the balance sheet to pick up those rate regulation balances and flows. And so you should still get the IFRS comparability, but they will still be able to carry forward those balances. That is expected to be published in January, February next year, so that's the finalisation of that. At the same time, we're still working on rate regulation major project to take and carry forward these balances. Can you keep them? In other words, are there any rate regulation activities that would give rise to access to liability that should be recognised on the balance sheet? And the discussion paper should be out the first or second quarter of next year. The other thing.
A question, only because it's a question. IFRS 6 came out and it's been around forever.
We've had that discussion.
So, if the DP doesn't get to a conclusive answer, does this one also hang around forever?
I think if there's an answer, that the answer will either be yes, you can, or no, you can't have rate regulation on assets or liabilities. If the answer is no, then we would have to withdraw the usual standard. And that's the only outcome you can see.
Okay,
so
without putting a deadline, There's a medium-term binary outcome.
Yeah, and I think we've got a couple of defences to the interim standard, and I think in two cases at least, it's because the board members have said they will either meet the definition of an asset or liability, so there's no point having interim one because we won't get there anyway. So there are having interim standards doesn't prejudge the outcome. It's an unusual situation because Kevin, I think at the end of it, if we don't complete the major project, we have to conclude that they don't have methods or liabilities. That was one of the conditions about the interim standards, that it should not delay the major project. So we're still on track.
No, I think the last words by Alan, they were demanded to say, in case we are unable to conclude the major project, I think what would take precedence is the current framework. Under the current framework, it's more likely that there are no such assets on the NDP. So if we are able to put in the effort and there are such assets on the NDP, probably the continuation of the existing practices become problematic. Hopefully we will be able to conclude. I think that's the way. It's incumbent on us to finally conclude.
My concern was an interim standard and the whole history of the interim standard.
Yeah, I was really fine. Yeah. But then, a quarter or it could be a bit longer.
But unlike six, the scope of it is slightly different from the related. So the scope does not include everybody. That's one number one you need to think about. Because existing IFRS users cannot use the interim standard, it's only for those who are getting onto the highway. So that's a big difference, I would say. The other thing I wanted to touch on is that if there's any interest, I will not be around, but maybe next CCPF meeting, it might be a worthwhile to have a discussion on the discussion paper on the rate regulation, not the interim standard, but what is in the hopper. for the discussion paper might be a useful thing to consider at the next meeting.
I think, and also what you heard in your adjournment, your jurisdiction, that what I heard from the European Free Forum organized by these four firms essentially, that we in the end, very clear from European criteria to be able to recognize such assets and liabilities, which is on today, but clearly the poll was taken at the end of this conference on whether that is the formal majority we would like to be able to recognize such assets and liabilities. So today we have created an unlevel playing field, and we have to be very careful not to maintain an unlevel playing field for a long period of time.
Yeah, I think that only underlines the importance of having a good discussion on the full standard. What it doesn't mean is the board has to do to bridge certain things, but I think we should aim at getting a full standard for everybody, like Philippe mentioned, not to have a level playing field. So I think it's quite important to have a robust discussion on the discussion paper and get the feedback so the board can get a direction for next year.
The other major initiative, I think, is for disclosure, is that you've got a recession starting in materiality, but if I just give you that overview of where we're heading with the disclosure initiative. We did a major reorganization that now the microspectrometry team, or SDRL people often refer to it, has been brought in with the disclosure initiative. The way I describe it is we're interested in both what we disclose and how they disclose that information, other than how they present it or private. Relatedly, just as a brief aside, it is looking likely in our view that the SEC will make some positive steps towards requiring foreign filers to file their financial statements using our taxonomy. We believe that could happen as early as next year. So there will be some movement in the public statements from the SEC to make it increasingly likely that will happen. So, we've defined the themes and we haven't looked at the disclosure more generally. The first phase, which will come out of the disclosure draft early next year, we discussed this, I think, at the last global series meeting from narrow scope change to IS1, which is designed to try and free up a little bit, or take away some of the barriers to flexible reporting, and in particular, with things like there are examples of there, if you haven't come back, we expect to disclose the policy. So now we've got better examples. Policy disclosure, whether it's actually a choice of the standard as opposed to just the fact you pay tax. So we have a package of small changes going out beginning of next year. We expect that from January, I think, for the disclosure grant. At the same time, we've initiated a project to discuss materiality, and that's been jointly with IOSCO and the auditors, the IAAC. So we've had a couple of teleconferences so far. We're very cautious about that because the Americans around the table will tell me probably. There are two judgments out of the Supreme Court in the US that tell us what materiality means. So we've got to be very careful that we don't end up contradicting or encroaching on what has become well established in some regions. What we've got to do, of course, is to make sure that we provide practical guidance to people to help apply materiality to the NASA, and that's what we have to look at. The other medium-term aspect, we are looking at a project to replace IAS 178, in other words, the financial statement, the main financial statement presentation standard we have now, plus cash flow statements, and changes in accounting policies, and error correction and so on. And relatedly, IFRS 5, which is the asset health disposal. Part of that presentation. Now, we're loosely saying that if we get this right, in my view, we won't need a financial statement presentation project because we'll have developed some rigorous disclosure principles coming out of replacing those standards. We're in the research phase for that, and at the same time, we're also going to start the research phase towards a standardized standard review. People have told us that some standards are particularly burdensome. We're starting to go through that as well. We want to wait until we complete the framework project and the IS 178 replacement before we start to dive too deeply into the other standards. We're a bit nervous when you develop an accounting standard, you very carefully look at the recognition and measurement criteria, and the disclosure complement what you've developed. So to simply pick up the disclosure in isolation can be quite dangerous. So we're hoping that the changes we're making at the beginning of next year to the exposure draft and the discussion of materiality will actually go a long way to helping people apply the existing standards without having to go back into the other standards. But we are going to do a step-by-step review. And the last leg, which came out of the meeting a couple of weeks ago, we were asked to consider adding an ethnic reconciliation as a requirement as part of the special incident package. But there was a bit of pushback. We had some mixed signals. It seems to be a requirement or quite a common practice in the UK and France, but not many in many other countries. And so we were a bit worried about delaying all the other, what we think are improvements from IS1 by putting the ethnic reconciliation requirement in there. However, we did look at other groups that have seen that. Have been telling us for about 5 years now that they must have this information. So we have promised to continue to work on things like net debt reconciliation and reconciliation through cash flow statement and income statements, and since we say we've got sort of operating costs or something like that, and there's no clarity about that reconciliation. So we are going to look at some of those items a little bit in isolation.
I got a question about the research project, and it actually relates to IS29. I mean, my company is, been looking very hard at how we account for Venezuela, and no one likes how we account for Venezuela, and to be honest, obviously, a handful of other countries around the world, even but related to South America, I think we're looking quite hard, looking forward to Argentina, potentially accelerating it, its move again to high inflation. So, certainly, we believe that IS29 for at least we're using it in a consolidation environment. And the present produce central answer. So I just wondered, whether you feel a need to accelerate looking at accounting for high inflation to the extent.
Yes, it's not hyperinflation, because we're not 29 years of hyperinflation.
I'm talking about
hyperinflation, which I think most people are worried about.
I'm talking about hyperinflation, actually.
We'll still have it. People are worried about a 40-50% inflation as well. So at the moment, that the issue for us is two: staff capacity and also board capacity. And at the moment, we don't have a staff personality for the project. What has been happening is the emerging economy group, which we look after, has been doing a little bit of work on that, and we've had a group of South American standards that have been doing some work on a paper on high inflation. And IS29. So I believe that the next meeting of the Commons Group, which is in about 3 weeks' time, will actually, that's one of the items on the agenda. But I just don't want to worry the problem that we'll be able to accelerate that onto our group plan. And in any case, even if it comes on, it's probably sort of a 3 to 5 year
issue. No, I guess we can understand that, but certainly I think that time you will give it again. Very old standardized, and I personally kind of liked it.
I'm not exactly sure of the ISB standard, IFRS, or IAS, but for the Venezuela issue, I don't think high inflation or highly inflationary will get you there. We have Venezuela as highly inflationary. It doesn't matter. We're stuck with a fictitious official exchange rate that is probably 5 times. Below what the black market indicates, and it's pretty divorced from economics. And when we talk to our business partners, they can't believe that we're accounting for it this way. They're kind of saying, no way. And we're, this kind of discussion, you just put up a management discussion and analysis that says that economically it looks like there's a loss here in Venezuela, but, oh, by the way, the accounting standards, because I guess they're nervous of unofficial rates and preparers making up rates. have gotten this draconian solution. It's something that should be on the top of, but it's not on the top of your mind. There's a lot of, in my opinion, financial statements showing large values in Venezuela that's just not there.
But can I just ask, is that the issue for both of you? Is it the rate or is it the
Well, I think both, I forgot that. The two points. It's on an ongoing basis, does it make sense to hire? Because, to be honest, my view of it is when you mind any words, if you have two things. You can inflate the income statement and inflate the, follow the IAS 29, but it doesn't work if you don't have a corresponding devaluation of the currency. And that's the issue of Venezuela. You've got this artificial currency that's, you actually are restricted in getting cash out. It comes out in a dribble. We've got a lot of cash. It's not really blocked. No one can. We're not allowed to treat it as restricted cash because that's 5% of what student that does come out. So if there is a flow, but then it's up to the official rate. But it's nowhere enough to, so we have a strange issue too. We've got intercompany balances. We actually have an exchange loss in intercompany balances, which aren't actually shown in the consolidated account. So it's a very complex issue to explain internally to people and externally, because you've actually got an exposure on something that's not there in consolidation.
But you said something I did not quite understand. When you get your 5% cash flow, is that an official exchange rate?
That would be at the official exchange rate, because the central bank restricts what comes out of the country. So you end up with an accumulation of cash in the country, and you can't get it out. But the one
you can get it out.
Then it would be the official exchange rate.
Yeah.
We've got the same in Argentina, where if we can take out a maximum amount per day at the official, and the rest is blocked. And the SEC regulation panel recently issued a directive that in our MD&A, we've actually got to restate the financials to what the amount would have been if we had were able to transact at the blue rate as opposed to the official rate. So we've got to do an MD&A disclosure of the losses and the restrictions and so forth. You don't disclose in terms of the accounting
data. What's fascinating is that you do acknowledge the black rate.
We account at the official because that's.
And but you acknowledge in your MD&A that there's a black
it's not a black market rate. Right. If the banks will transact, it's just not the official rate.
Well, I think what I know in Venezuela is even worse than that.
It's against the law.
It's against the law to do that. So you as Bob said, you've got a very artificial rate, and we all can see on everyone. I think in the banking world, our treasury people can see that perhaps when the next government is elected, there will be a dramatic, people are saying, devaluation. But there's no way of being able to recognize, we all feel that that's likely,
yeah.
But there's no way of being able to recognize it. Which, to explain that to your CEO or chairman, and they just don't understand it. Why we have to artificially inflate
it. I think it might be helpful for us if you could actually summarise what you think the issues are and put them in writing and send them in to us, because the Emerging Economies Group is looking at it.
Unless it's
fine
alarm.
So they're probably not looking from a consolidation point of view, they're probably looking at it more from a domestic point of view, so it'd be good to make sure we get the issues in there, so we've got...
We'd love to do that.
And I can think through the NPC ring, where they said, what are the disclosure requirements for our MD&A?
Okay. Over to Keith.
No, I haven't got anything to say about that.
Conceptual framework, can you touch us on that?
Well, we're talking about conceptual framework later on. But maybe they're going to take up a word about the other research projects. Most of those, we're starting to start those up. There's not been a huge amount of move forward on those so far.
the first things you'll like to see from those are work towards discussion papers, which will be with the objective of seeing whether there is an issue for us to look at, and so what the scope is, and to get some feedback on that. So you might start to see some of that coming through next year. But there's not a huge amount of progress reports over this day.
We've had this come under common control. It's been at the board once a couple of months ago. I think this count rate was due to go in September, but we've got an initial report.
Any questions?
Yes,
for to Alan and Peter. If none, we're slightly ahead of time, but we can ask Michael, who is luckily here, to talk about the implementation committee. Maybe we can have a break.